Sope jana bala bagrevare hari. Yashoda nandana vraja jana ranjana. Yashoda nandana vraja jana ranjana. Yamuna tira vanachari. Yamuna tira vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Bihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvrajakachara Sotera Sotashri Shimna Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Kiskan Foundacharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Angaranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sampadaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Kinamani Namaste Sarasade and Gauravani Vachani Vasisha Shunyavadi Paskata Desi Tarni. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I will be reading a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam today, but I have a little intro to that. It'll take me a little while to get around to it, so bear with me. There's two national events that have taken over the news, pretty much. Mostly, of course, for a few months now, we've been hearing about coronavirus, and that's everybody knows about that, and that's been there. And we know that as of now, I don't know, something like 400,000 people around the world have died, and something like 115,000 in the United States. So that's been a very significant event. Recently, we've had a great deal of social unrest in America, based upon racial issues and the Black Lives Matter movement. So these things are both there, very strongly, and if you look at any news, that's everything you see. So the thought I had today was, how do devotees of Krishna respond to these situations? Respond to these situations where there's obviously unrest, where people are suffering, where there's great difficulties in this material world. Now, I don't want to discuss the politics on either side. That's not our purpose in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. But we do want to try to understand events through the lens of our scriptures, the Vedic tradition, Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas. And I think we need to understand in a very personal way, not a theoretical way. In other words, not exactly what's the big principle, although we also want to talk about the big principles, but also how do we deal as human beings with other human beings? How do we as devotees deal with people, whether they be our people at work, people, our friends, people we know, family members, when these issues come up? What do we say? And particularly if it's a very personal sort of interaction, someone who's very affected by these events. So I think that's an important thing to think about, and obviously it leads us to much larger philosophical issues as devotees. I want to give you two examples. Here's the first example. You tell me that a relative of yours has just died of coronavirus. What do I say? Well, one possible response would be, listen, everyone has to die. That's the law of material nature. Actually, there is no death. The Bhagavad Gita 2.20 tells us, for the soul there is neither birth nor death. He's not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He's unborn, eternal, ever-existing, primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. So why should we grieve for the eternal soul? Why should we grieve for the body? And further, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, while speaking learned words, you're mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living or the dead. Now, that statement is factually true. And it was shastrically correct, wasn't it? I mean, that is correct. We know this is the philosophy of what goes on in the material world. But something seems to be missing from that presentation, doesn't it? Any quick thoughts? Affection? Okay. I'll give you a second example. Okay, here, second example is I have an African-American friend, and they say to me, everything you're seeing on the news completely squares with my experience. People of color in this country are treated very badly, particularly by the police, and I support the Black Lives Matter movement. So one response might be, well, yes, Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter. All living entities are equal and all are created by Krishna. We are the spirit soul, not the body, so one should not identify with race, nationality, gender, etc. Those are bodily designations and they are just Maya illusion. Again, that's true. What is lacking? In both of these responses, what seems to be lacking?
Compassion.
Who said compassion?
Got the gold star.
There was no compassion, right? So, what I'd like to talk about today is how does a devotee be both truthful and compassionate? Because I think that really is our duty, to be both of those things. And I think we have many examples in our scriptures and from our acharyas who were the embodiments of compassion and also did not sugarcoat or, you know, water down the philosophy, but spoke strongly about the philosophy, but in a way that was compassionate and loving towards all living entities. And I think that that is what we should be trying to emulate as devotees. All right, this brings us to our verse. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 611, and I mainly picked this for the purport, so that's why I'm going to read a few of the other verses, because then the purport will kind of make sense. It's Sri Parikadubacha Nivritti Marga Katita Adhava Bhagavata Yata Krama Yoga Palavdena Brahma Yad Asam Shriti. Maharaj Parikad said, O my Lord, O Shukadeva Goswami. By the way, this is the first verse of the sixth canto, and you all know what that is. You've already described the path of liberation, Nivritti Marga. By following that path, one is certainly elevated gradually to the highest planetary system, Brahmaloka. Thus one's promoted to the world along with the Brahma. Thus one's repetition of birth and death in the material world ceases. Now, I'm going to read the next couple of verses because that's really what Prabhupada's commenting on, a whole series of verses in his first purport. Text 2. O great sage Shukadeva Swami, Goswami, unless the living entity is freed from the infection of the material modes of nature, he receives different types of bodies in which to enjoy or suffer, and according to the body, he is understood to have various inclinations. By following these inclinations, he traverses the path called the Pravritti Marg, by which one may be elevated to the heavenly planets, as you've already described. You've also described, at the end of the fifth canto, the varieties of a hellish life that result from impious activities, and you've described in the fourth canto the first Manvantara which presided over Swayambhuva Manu. Text 6. O greatly fortunate and opulent Shukadeva Goswami, kindly tell me now how human beings may be saved from having to enter the hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. So you can see the natural progression. End of the fifth canto was the description of the hellish planets. Maharaj Parikad became very concerned. You know, he is very concerned. And he's really saying to Shukadeva Goswami, how are people going to be saved from this? This is his natural inclination to be concerned. Shukadeva Goswami, also as a very concerned, compassionate devotee, now will begin to tell the story of Ajamil. And how Ajamil, of course, named his son Narayan, how he chanted the name Narayan at the time of death and was saved from the Yamadutas. So this is the lead up. This is the introduction to several chapters of the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describe the great mercy of the Lord by giving the holy name, which saves people from all calamities of life. So, the next couple of verses, we read those verses. Here's the purport Srila Prabhupada wrote, 611. Since Maharaj Parikad was a Vaishnava, when he heard the description at the end of the fifth canto of the different hellish conditions of life, he was very much concerned with how to liberate the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya and take them back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he reminded his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami, about the Nivritti Marg, or path of liberation, which he described in the second canto. Maharaj Pariksit, who at the time of death was fortunate to have met Shukadeva Goswami, inquired from him about the path of liberation. Pariksit Maharaj was astonished that living entities in this conditional stage do not accept the path of liberation, devotional service, instead of suffering in so many hellish conditions. This is a symptom of a Vaishnava. Vanchakalpa Tirubhyascha Kribasindavyavacha. A Vaishnava is an ocean of mercy. Paradupaduki. He is unhappy because of the unhappiness of others. Therefore, Pariksit Maharaj, being compassionate toward the conditioned souls suffering in hellish life, suggested that Shukadeva Goswami continue describing the path of liberation, which he had explained in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Pariksit Maharaj, therefore, was very eager to hear from Shukadeva Goswami about the path of liberation for the conditioned soul. So we can see that Pariksit Maharaj's interest is what he really wanted to see, what he was very concerned about, was to know how can the conditioned souls be saved from hellish conditions of life. And as Prabhupada described, this was naturally because he was compassionate toward the conditioned souls. He was, as Prahlad Maharaj said, paradukaduki, compassionate to only unhappy because of the unhappiness of others. So we have these two ideas, truthfulness and compassion. Bhagavad Gita chapter 16 describes the divine qualities, including truthfulness, satyam. And we know that truthfulness is one of the four pillars of religiosity. Very, very important in civilized society that we have truthfulness, honesty. And we also know that one of the foremost qualities of a Brahmin is truthfulness. And there's several pastimes and stories talking about the truthfulness as one of the principal qualities by which a Brahmin performs his activity. Now, on the other side, in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's talks with Sanatana Goswami, he talks about the 26 qualities of devotees. The very first one he had given is kripalu, mercy. And also, of course, in that same verse in chapter 16, the different qualities are mentioned, also dayabhuteshu, mercy toward all living entities. So those two things are both there in our scriptures, the idea of mercy, the idea of truthfulness. So we are honest in understanding the material miseries of life. We don't try to say, yes, things are wonderful, there is no unhappiness, because obviously there is. There are hundreds of thousands of people dying of this pandemic, and so many other things are happening, and people are being suffering or feeling oppressed or whatever it may be. So, yes, these miseries are there, and we don't try to shy away from those things. But at the same time, we approach others, whether they be devotees or non-devotees or whatever, first, with compassion. One thing that seems to be almost a truism is that truth is much more palatable if delivered with care and kindness. Isn't that true? Somebody once said that, I can't remember who it was. It was some sannyasi, someone giving a class. Many, many years ago, I remember this. He said that if you tell somebody what they should do, they may or may not listen to you. But if you're their friend, they will probably listen to you. Yes. So if they feel friendship from you, they're much more willing, much more likely to hear your, quote, good instruction. But sometimes we come on just with lots of instruction and philosophy, and you should do this and do that, and this is the way it is, and you're all nonsense, and you're all Maya, and can turn people off. What we need to convey is the sense of compassion. I mean, that is what Prabhupada did for us. When we met Srila Prabhupada, whether we even understood very much of the philosophy, we all felt, here is a person, not only who wouldn't cheat me, who would always tell the truth, but a person who deeply cared. A person who loved me probably in a way that no one in the material world could love me, because it was spiritual. He gives that spiritual connection. So that is really is what helps to deliver all these sinful people of the world. That they're approached with kindness, with compassion, with love, and are given the absolute truth. At least to have an opportunity to know the truth of Krishna consciousness. So understanding suffering of others is the basis for Vaishnava compassion. When you think about it, we talk a lot about preaching, we talk about book distribution, we talk, you know, all these things, saving the conditioned souls. Why? Who cares? Why does it matter? Do we want to just build a bunch of devotees, get a lot of numbers in our group? Do we want to, you know, no. There's no reason to even do this except the fact that every living entity in this material world is suffering. They're all suffering. Everyone is experiencing, even if they don't know they're suffering, they are experiencing birth, death, disease, and old age. They are experiencing the threefold miseries. That is there for everyone. And the devotee knows that. We understand that. We're cognizant of the fact of the suffering living entities, and we know that the best thing that one can do for them is to try to help them. So, to understand the suffering of others, we say, is compassion. One definition of compassion is like pity or sympathy, but that's really sort of the bodily platform. Sometimes we talk about it being empathy. That's a little bit better. Empathy means the identification or vicarious experiencing of the feelings, thoughts, or attitudes of another person. I would say compassion is even deeper than empathy. It goes further. Because compassion is not only the deep awareness of the suffering of another person, but it's also coupled with the wish and the knowledge of how to relieve that suffering. So just being sympathetic to another person is good, it's nice, but only goes so far if you really cannot offer them something that is going to help them in that situation. There's a really nice analogy in the Srimad Bhagavatam that actually describes empathy and compassion sort of together. This is 10.10.14 of the Bhagavatam. By seeing their faces, oh, by the way, this is Narada Muni speaking, and this is in the story of the liberation of Nalakuvara and Manugriva, okay, the twin Arjuna trees. So he was explaining why they had to experience some pain in their own life, because they were completely hedonistic, unconcerned, at least apparently, seemed unconcerned for others, just out for enjoyment. So Narada said, by seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are pinpricked. Okay? In other words, if you've been picked by, you know, if someone sticks you with a pin and you see someone else stick by a pin, you understand what they're experiencing. Okay? That's what he's saying. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, he does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. So, it's a really good example Narada gives. So there's two parts to compassion, as we're saying. One is understanding the suffering of others, to be able to see outside oneself. In other words, it's not about you, it's about what the other person is experiencing, and then the desire to relieve others of that suffering. Now, we could say that a devotee's real compassion and deepest compassion is spiritual, because we want to see people not just happy in this lifetime, but ultimately liberated, developing a relationship with Krishna, back to their loving, devotional relationship with the Lord, being able to get out of this material world, go back to Godhead, back to Krishna. So that's the deepest spiritual compassion. But it doesn't mean that we're devoid of just more general compassion for the well-being of others. Doesn't mean, well, hey, you may be experiencing some pain, but I don't care because that has nothing to do with your spirit soul. You know, chant Hare Krishna Prabhu and, you know, suck it up. No, that's not the mood of the devotee either. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, if we look at his life and we look at his relationships with the disciples, he so often would inquire about the disciples' health. He, of course, he was a pharmacist, so he would suggest remedies. He'd be very concerned about them. There's one story which I just found so remarkable when Prabhupada was extremely ill at the very end of his life, and some devotee came in to see him, very concerned, probably the last time he'd ever see Srila Prabhupada in the last couple of weeks of his life. And Srila Prabhupada had heard from someone that he had some illness or something. And the first thing Srila Prabhupada did was inquire from him about another minor bodily inconvenience where Srila Prabhupada is like, you know, emaciated, like, you know, totally on his deathbed. And this is the way Prabhupada was. This care, this concern, always there. I remember another story, I remember he was on a morning walk, and it was a cold morning. And, you know, a lot of times the devotees kind of would, if they could get on a morning walk, they'd just run out and not really worry about too much else. Well, there was one girl, young woman, but we were all young boys and girls at that time, probably called us boys and girls. And she didn't wear a coat or anything, and it was very cold, and Prabhupada noticed that she seemed cold. So Prabhupada took off his chadar and gave it to her, put it around her. This is his young disciple, you know. And so this was like the idea, not that the pure devotee is unconcerned with others, unconcerned with anything except, you know, some very abstract, theoretical, you know, part of their spiritual existence. No, we're concerned with everything, especially about devotees. We want to serve devotees in all ways. You know, we want to give devotees prasadam. We want to make sure that they're happy. We want to make sure they're healthy. All of these things. You know, another example, a very well-known example. Srila Prabhupada was up on the balcony or up on the top of one of the buildings in Mayapur. And he looked down below where the garbage dumpster was. And there was all the garbage, you know, plates and everything prasadam. And there was young local children who were very, very poor and extremely hungry. They were not only going through the garbage to get something to eat, but they were fighting with the dogs to get it. Who would get it first, the dogs or the children? Prabhupada was so moved that he was in tears. And at that point, Prabhupada said, no one within, 10 miles of Mayapur should ever go hungry. And that's when Food for Life has started. That's when the food program has began. After Srila Prabhupada said that, I think Jayapataka Swami and Bhavananda Swami started it up, didn't they? Right? And soon after that, you know. And it's still going, of course. Still going all over the world. In fact, there's millions of plates of prasadam being served out in India. I think even now, they're very, very active. ISKCON is very active, even during the coronavirus, you know, trying to give out prasadam, because this was Prabhupada's desire. You know, and so you can say, well, yeah, it's spiritual food, so it's concerned about the spiritual welfare of them. Yes, it was. But he was also in tears just because of the misery that these poor children were suffering. So we're not heartless. We're not stones. You know, we feel the suffering that is there in the living entities, and therefore we want to give them a permanent solution. I think there's another nice example that I read recently. This is in the Ray of Vishnu, the biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. I'll read from this. It says, during this tour, when Srila Saraswati Thakur and his followers returning from a darshan of Sakshi Gopal, he noticed that his householder followers refused to give alms to some poor people who were requesting help. He stated that this type of consideration by householders expresses miserliness, mercilessness, and a lack of affliction for others' distress. From this attitude, the heart becomes hard and attacked with niggardliness. That's kind of an old-fashioned term, which means miserliness or, you know, being cheap. And as a result, the tendency to spend money even for Vishnu's service, which is the means of one's own interest, disappears. In other words, if you are so, you know, if you become so hard-hearted that you never want to help anybody, eventually you're not going to want to give to Krishna either. Is what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj is saying. You know, in other words, we want to keep the heart soft for Krishna. Therefore, offense in service, seva aparad is invited. And in order to guard against these hypocritical, sinful deliberations, Sri Gaura Sundar, in his pastimes, used to give help to lowly, distressed people. Even earned wealth is obtained by the mercy of God. It is not incorrect use of wealth if some portion of mercy is given to requesting poor people. It is a proper use. To distribute mercy or prasad is the compulsory duty of householder Vaishnavas. Even though these people's miserableness has been obtained through the fault of their own karma, that's the truthfulness, that's the knowledge, we know, yes, they're in a situation because of whatever karma they've experienced, then he says, still they are God's people. So this is the balance that a Vaishnavacharya sees. He sees the spiritual reality, he knows why people are suffering, but also has that concern and compassion. And he also wanted to make sure that his disciples develop that mood of compassion. That was, I think, what he was trying to teach, really. So, of course, as I said, devotees do more than just give out food or, you know, do welfare work. Devotees have the highest level of spiritual compassion. The real welfare work, as Prabhupada often said, is giving people Krishna consciousness. making a permanent solution to people's problems. The problems of birth, death, disease, and old age. So, probably this deepest spiritual compassion, there's so many wonderful examples of our Vaishnavacharyas, but of course, probably one of the best exemplifiers of this is Prahlad Maharaj. And this is one of his famous verses. "O best of great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. Wherever I stay, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness, maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them." So I think this is important because Prahlad Maharaj is saying on one hand, they're fools because they're trying to maintain materialistic life. You know, they're doing all these things that are only bringing them unhappiness. But still, I have compassion, I'm concerned, I feel love for them. That's the mood of the devotee and how to help them. And then, Prahlad Maharaj was asked by Lord Nrisimhadev to take some boon, some benediction. Of course, he refused. He said, "I'm not a merchant. I'm not, you know, I am your devotee. I'm not asking anything in return." Nrisimhadev said, "You must ask something." So Prahlad said, "Okay, first, let me please have no material desires in my heart, only a desire to serve you." And she said, "All right, ask something else." He says, "Okay. My second request then is that my father, Hiranyakasipu, the greatest of demons, who tortured me, tried to kill me, persecuted me, please be relieved and not have to suffer. Please excuse his offenses." That's pretty compassionate. I think that would be difficult for most of us to feel that kind of compassion in those circumstances. So this is why, of course, Prahlad Maharaj is one of the greatest devotees, greatest examples of compassion. Okay. And of course, why do the great devotees, the acharyas, have this quality of compassion? Because Krishna has that. It's coming from Krishna. We all have minute qualities of Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of all qualities, and as spirit souls, jivas, you know, we have little tiny portions. So we have a little bit of compassion, a little bit of mercy, because Krishna has those. And the best exemplifier of Krishna's mercy, of course, was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came, Namo Mahapadanaya Krishna Prem Pradayate, the most merciful, most magnanimous incarnation of Krishna, gave the easiest process of realization, chanting Hare Krishna, but the highest, deepest philosophy. He gave us the best thing for the lowest price. What a deal. That is mercy. That is true mercy that we got from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he engages us in the pastimes of saving the conditioned souls. So our mission, following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, is to try to help bring this mercy of Lord Chaitanya to every town and village, to chanting the holy name, so that so many people can receive that same mercy that we have received. Again, not that we have so much necessarily compassion, but we're able to tap in a little bit to the compassion of Lord Chaitanya, the compassion of Srila Prabhupada, the compassion of our acharyas. Because that's there and we are their followers. We get a little glimpse of that. And at least we know that is the right thing to do. So Lord Chaitanya, of course, was in the mood of Radharani. He came with the golden complexion of Radharani. He came in her mood. Why? Because Radharani is known as Karunamayi. She is the most compassionate. The embodiment of Krishna's compassion, I think, could safely be said to be found in Radharani. Her sweetness, her mercy, her kindness to the devotees cannot be matched anywhere. Of course, none of Radharani's qualities can be matched by anybody. She's the greatest devotee in all respects. But she also is that emblem of Krishna's mercy. And because of that, when Krishna descended as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to come in that mood of Radharani so that that mercy could be extended to all the living entities in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada talks about Radharani and her mercy and very nice purport. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.23. Prabhupada says, "In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. Srimati Radharani is a tender-hearted, feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to the sincere devotees, and once she recommends such a devotee to Lord Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. In other words, it might be more difficult to get the mercy, the full mercy of Krishna, but it's more easy to get the full mercy of Radharani, and then Radharani will recommend that devotee. Radharani is Hari Priya, very dear to Krishna. So if we approach Krishna through Radharani, through the mercy of Radharani, then it becomes very easy. If Radharani recommends, this devotee is very nice, then Krishna immediately accepts. However fool I may be, because it is recommended by Radharani, Krishna accepts. Therefore in Vrindavan, you will find that all the devotees, they're chanting more Radharani's name than Krishna's. Wherever you go, you'll find devotees addressing Jai Radhe. You'll find still in Vrindavan, they're glorifying Radharani. They're more interested in worshiping Radharani, because however fallen I may be, if some way or other I can please Radharani, then it is very easy for me to understand Krishna. That was actually a Srila Prabhupada's Radhastami lecture, 1971. So Srila Prabhupada gave us a wonderful class about the glories of Srimati Radharani and focused on this merciful nature. How one can easily approach Radharani to get her mercy. So the Vaishnavas approach Radharani to get her mercy. We approach Krishna to get his mercy. Obviously, we approach our guru, Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, the disciplic succession, and the mercy of all the Vaishnavas. The mercy of all the Vaishnavas. Our God brothers, God sisters, everyone can help us so much in spiritual life. So as we're saying, devotees can possess the same qualities of Krishna in small degrees, and devotees naturally have this quality of compassion or mercy or kindness. It's almost like a natural thing for devotees, you know, to be in that mood. So like Prahlad, our Acharyas, and Srila Prabhupada, through their mercy, have given Krishna consciousness to the fallen souls of this world, bring them back to Godhead. So we try to follow in their footsteps, and we try to help, we try to assist our spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Acharyas, in their mission of delivering the conditioned souls and giving their mercy to everyone. Now, sometimes we might think, well, I don't know if I really feel this all the time. I mean, do I really feel paradukha dukhi? I'm only unhappy, seeing the unhappiness of others. You know, I'm completely content myself, but when others are unhappy, it makes me so unhappy. It's obviously an advanced stage. It's an elevated stage of having that realization, being able to practice that in our life. I think part of the problem we have is an inability to see others outside of the reference of our own self. We tend to be concerned with our own issues, our own problems, and that tends to prevent our compassion for others. Now, that's a very normal thing. Everyone has self-interest. It's natural. It's natural. But we have to be aware of it and avoid too much self-absorption. Because then it's like, it can be very easy not to see the suffering of others, or not being very willing to help the suffering of others, or show proper concern or compassion towards them. So how do we develop compassion? Well, here's a few things I came up with. This is just my no particular source. I think the first thing is that we have to have knowledge. We need to have knowledge of the instruction of Krishna and the Guru, which means we must hear. We must hear this philosophy. When we hear the philosophy, one of the first things that we understand is material world is a place of suffering. Everybody's heard that a few hundred times, right? Material world is a place of suffering. When we kind of get that, yeah, people are suffering. And Krishna consciousness is the solution to that suffering. We've heard that a few hundred times too. Well, when we start to get it, and we start to realize that and understand it, yeah, we have the answers to people's suffering, and we can help them. So, knowing the philosophy, understanding it with realization, is the first step. Then we have to have conviction, or faith. The faith must become strong because there are difficulties. There are difficulties for people in the material world. There are difficulties for devotees as long as we're in this material world. So we often have to undergo difficulties. We take trouble. But our faith is that Krishna knows what's best. Krishna is our Lord and Master. We are surrendered to Him. And whatever is happening to us, somehow or another, we simply take shelter in Krishna. And that surrendering, taking shelter to Krishna, when that faith and conviction becomes stronger, then it becomes more easy to give to others. Then I think another thing is just practice. You know, they say if you want to become humble, try acting humble, right? If I act, you know, I may have very little humility, but if I try to act humbly to everybody, eventually I may get it. Eventually I may actually understand it. It may start sinking through. Well, yeah, this is the way I should be. This is the correct way to be. You know, this is the spiritual path for a Vaishnava. So we need to practice compassion. And that some of that means practicing preaching or even just attempting to preach. Attempting to give Krishna consciousness to others helps to develop our compassion. Because Krishna gives us guidance from within and purifies us very much. The more that we try to give, the more Krishna gives to us. And Krishna will help us to develop spiritually by us trying to give to Him. And of course, there needs to be some genuine spiritual advancement. But you're not going to be filled with compassion without being somewhat free of material desires and having developed some love for Krishna. And the heart becomes soft as love of Krishna develops. So, yes, in one sense, practice, but the other, I guess you could turn it around. The other perspective is you don't really need to practice because you become Krishna conscious. Naturally, compassion develops within you. So both things are there, you know. The heart does become soft as our Krishna conscious develops. And naturally, there will be the desire to help others. I'm going to end here with a purport from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.20.21. And this is Prabhupada giving a description of the compassionate devotee. Srila Prabhupada says, "A sadhu is a devotee of the Lord. His concern, therefore, is to enlighten people in devotional service to the Lord. That is his mercy. He knows that without devotional service to the Lord, human life is spoiled. A devotee travels all over the country from door to door preaching. Be Krishna conscious. Be a devotee of Lord Krishna. Don't spoil your life in simply fulfilling your animal propensities. Human life is meant for self-realization or Krishna consciousness. These are the preachings of a sadhu. He is not satisfied with his own liberation. He always thinks about others. He is the most compassionate personality towards all the fallen souls. One of his qualifications, therefore, is Karunika, great mercy to the fallen souls." So, yes, this is a quality we saw in Srila Prabhupada that, and often when you listen, especially a lot of his very early classes, 66, 67, you notice he seems to speak a little more fast. He speaks with great urgency. And how many times does Srila Prabhupada say, "Do not waste this human form of life"? You heard Srila Prabhupada say that many, many times in classes. Do not waste this human form of life. He's exhorting us. Please, please take to Krishna consciousness. He feels that intensity, and that intensity to get people to take Krishna consciousness, that is his natural compassion. That is the manifestation of the mercy of the Guru, of Srila Prabhupada. So, if we can just take shelter, Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, our Guru, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the devotees, we will develop this mood of compassion. And so, getting back to our original theme quite a while ago, when we discuss these issues and when we talk to people, again, we need to give both. We need to give both truth and compassion. In other words, help people to understand what is going on in life. Coronavirus, what is the truth there? A lot of it comes from animal slaughter, right? A lot of these pandemic viruses come from people eating animals. That's the truth. So we could say, Well, you know, if you wouldn't eat animals, it's your fault. You know, you wouldn't all get sick. That's not very effective. Not a good strategy. Better to say, truthfully, we feel some compassion. We understand the suffering, understand the pain. Now, let's see what we could do. What would help that? Then we can talk about things like meat eating. Prabhupada said that all the wars that we experience in this world are reactions to people killing cows. You know, but you know, if someone says, "My son was just killed in the war," you say, "Well, that's what you get for killing a cow." Wrong. No, that's not balancing truth with compassion. And that's just what I'm trying to say, I think, primarily. That we want to present Krishna consciousness the right way. And not just we make a show of compassion so we can eventually get them to hear the philosophy. We have to feel it. We need to have that. We need to have that experience. We need to have that feeling towards people. That we do understand, or at least we're trying to understand, that they are suffering. There's great suffering in this material world. And we have a solution for that suffering. Chanting the holy name. So thank you very much. I'll end there. If there are any questions or comments, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
I have a question. When Vishnujan Swami was approaching Prabhupada, was saying that, "Prabhupada, you are so merciful to me." Prabhupada replied, "I'm merciful to everyone, but you are accepting what I'm giving and appreciating. Yeah. That's the only difference."
Yeah.
So what is the strategy to actually make people to understand that? Because the definition of mercy, compassion, like a tsunami, people were fed with the hot dogs. I mean, their compassion, that's how the propaganda. They came to get donation from me too.
Mm.
That they're going to distribute the hot dogs.
Yeah.
But the idea of compassion, the meaning of compassion, is not understood amongst, beside the Hare Krishna. I mean,
right.
The word is there, everybody.
Yeah. But they don't understand the spiritual dimension of it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, now your original point was about when Vishnu Swami asked the Prabhupada, when he said to him that, you know, it was his mercy, and he said, "You have taken the mercy," more or less. You have. Yeah, and Prabhupada, I remember other times Prabhupada said that. In other words, the mercy is there for everyone, right? But not everybody takes it. How many people met Srila Prabhupada or saw Srila Prabhupada? How many people have heard the holy name through all the Harinam Sankirtan? How many millions and millions of people got books? Some people took it up and some people didn't. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the rain. He says, you know, he said the rain falls everywhere without discrimination. Falls on the ocean, doesn't do much good, falls on dry, barren land, and also falls on fertile fields. So, you know, sometimes there'll be fertile fields, and sometimes there aren't. But just as the ocean doesn't discriminate and drops its water everywhere, it's there for everyone, so the pure devotee also just gives their mercy to everyone. And some may be fertile fields for taking it up, and others may not.
So you're saying we should keep on going?
Absolutely. Because Krishna is seeing the endeavor, seeing that. There's so many examples like that. Once the devotees were trying to make life members in Bombay, and they went out week after week after week, and they couldn't do anything. And Prabhupada said, "It's all right. You're making the endeavor." You know, you. In other words, Krishna sees the endeavor, and in fact, Krishna says you have a right to your work, your service, but not to the result. Right? Mm-hmm. The result is up to Krishna. Yeah.
I mean, in one sense, Bodhinarayan Maharaj mentioned in the email to me, he said the statistics shows that actually they consume last year 74 million animals. I mean, that's a lot of...
Who did?
Bodhinarayan Swami.
No, where?
The statistics from the vegans research.
No, I mean, who consumes 74 million?
The human being in America, Canada, this part of the world.
Yeah?
That's a lot of animal. I mean, just, I was scared, kind of, like 74 million. That's
a lot of heavy karma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's very, it's required art, as you said. We have to express our compassion, but there is an art. We cannot tell the truth in a straight, but with a quoting or, you know, something.
Yeah, absolutely, it is an art. Preaching effectively is an art, and it requires, you know, a certain amount of social skills, to be honest. You know, and we saw this expertise in Prabhupada. Well, because we saw Prabhupada was expert at everything. You know, what can I say? But, you know, there are times when Prabhupada would be walking in a neighborhood and somebody there would just walk by, and Prabhupada would just say, "Good morning, how are you?" He knew that was the best thing to say to that person. I mean, of course, you know, he didn't go up and start preaching to them. You know, in other words, it is an art. It does take some sensitivity to when best to give this person this much. I mean, we try to give as much as we can, of course, you know, without offending.
Yes.
Okay, any other questions?
I appreciate that also, that in India that they distributed as a 4 million prasadam plate. That's a lot of prasadam.
I saw that, yeah.
Four million.
That's amazing.
And still going.
Think how much work in the kitchen that is. Wow. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Bol. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.